Give me 15 minutes and you'll never think about saving in the same way again. Have you ever tried so hard not to do something and then you do exactly what you've been trying to avoid? This is what happens when you're trying to take no risk with your money and just trying to keep it safe in a savings account because you think in this way you're actually protecting your wealth. In actual fact, this could be destroying your wealth. So I'm hoping to convince you today, the biggest risk you can take with your money is taking no risk at all. Andre, a 35-year-old accountant who completed my investing course, for the first time felt empowered to start looking into and understanding his investments. He realized that he was 80% invested in bonds or low-risk investments, and his advisor never really explained any of this to him. And once he understood risk and how crucial it is to take risk for long-term returns, he realized that an 80-20 split in his portfolio was definitely not optimal. And also, it wasn't necessarily protecting him against anything. Have a look at this chart, which compares US bonds and stocks over a 20-year timeline. And this includes the 2008 global financial crisis. You would notice that after a 20-year timeline, there is a massive difference between having taken on risk and in investing in stocks or like an S&P 500 ETF, for example, versus just staying safe in low risk bonds. In actual fact, this is just looking at 10,000 invested over a 20-year timeline. There is a difference of 60,000 after 20 years. So yes, of course, there is much more volatility. But if you had just invested in bonds for this entire timeline, yes, it would have protected you from the downside during 2008 crash. But you would have given up so much potential upside and potentially costing you your retirement if your timeline had been this long. The thing is, I never see an educated investor that doesn't take risk. Because when you understand risk, you will see volatility as an opportunity and not as a threat. So in this video, I'm going to unpack why saving is not enough. We'll also look at my risk and education curve. And I'll explain to you why risk is actually not that scary using some interesting eye-opening charts. But first, if your goal is financial freedom, but you have no idea what your financial freedom number is or how far you are on your way to financial freedom, then you can use my free financial freedom calculator. It's linked in the description. I get it. I understand that keeping money in a savings account or a fixed deposit feels very secure. You know exactly what you're getting, your interest gets paid every month, and there are no scary up and down charts because you don't have any volatility in a savings account. But if you zoom out 10, 20, or 30 years, the picture looks quite different, especially if you're in a country where interest rates on your deposits are barely keeping up with inflation. Yes, you'll need some money in a savings account. I'll discuss when and how much, but the majority of your long-term investments you need to look into putting into stocks or bond ETFs. The big problem that most people miss out when they earn interest on investment is that it is taxed quite heavily because interest would be taxed as income. And that would mean that would be included in your highest marginal tax bracket. So if you're, for example, in the highest marginal tax bracket in South Africa, where you're paying 45% of tax, you've got $1 million in a fixed deposit earning an 8% return, that would mean even after your interest exemption, you're earning 80K of interest a year and you're still paying 25K of tax on that. That leaves you with 55K post-tax interest earned. And that is a 5.5% return on your million deposit. And that is in line with inflation. So it means that you're just keeping up with inflation. And in the dollar terms, you're actually losing money because the rand has lost 6% on average to the dollar. 20 years. So that's definitely not the smart way to build wealth. By the way, this is not only a problem in South Africa where inflation is high, although people tend to like deposits because the interest rate seems quite high to them, but they forget to think about the tax impact, but also the inflation and dollar returns on that deposit. But have a look at this chart that compares saving and investing in the UK. If you've got Saving Susan and Investing Inez both put $500 a month towards their investment accounts, although Susan just keeps hers in a savings account that earns 4.5% interest in the UK. And Inez invests just in a global ETF that tracks the global stock market. After a 40-year period, Saving Susan ends up with £655,000 and investing in theirs ends up with almost 2.6 million. That's a £2 million difference just because she had a long time horizon, so she was willing to take stock market risk. And if we apply the same thinking to someone in South Africa, saving Susan and investing in theirs, but in South Africa, saving Susan, they both put 1,000 towards their account. Saving Susan is in her savings account where she earns 7% interest, and investing in theirs is in a global stock market ETF. Over a 40-year timeline, we're using 17-year return assumptions, which of course we can't guarantee it would look like this in future, but it's a good base for us to work off of. So after 40 years, investing in this could potentially have more than 13 million by investing in a global stock market ETF. Saving Susan would only have 2.9 million. So the difference between this is more than 10 million rand over a 40-year timeline, because investing in this was smart enough to take smart stock market risk with her investments, and because she had a long timeline. So why would she not? So the two biggest mistakes I see when it comes to taking risk in your investment portfolio is, first of all, holding too much cash in a savings account or fixed deposit, which I've explained, but also having too much exposure to bonds. Especially if you're a young investor or if you've got a higher risk appetite, even if you are an older investor, it's still important to have a portion of your investment portfolio that is still exposed to stock market risk, because you're not going to use all of your money in the next 5 years. So some of your money, your portfolio, still has a long time horizon, and you need to also take some stock market risk with that. So just to explain to you the risk and return curve, if you have a look at this image, it shows how risk increases and also how potential return increases when we go from government bonds to bank deposits to corporate bonds and then to equity funds, where ETFs would fall here, and then shares, and I would add crypto as well. So the safest, lowest risk one would be government bonds and then bank deposits. If you still want to have low risk assets, but you want to take it one step further, where you take a little bit more risk for potentially higher return, corporate bonds could be the next step. But this is really just to help you understand where bonds lie relative to bank deposits on this risk and return curve. Because in the next chart, I want to compare the volatility of returns of a bond or US bond ETF to an S&P 500 ETF, which is the US stock market ETF. And you'll notice that the bonds are in blue. There is still some volatility. But if you compare it to the S&P 500 volatility that is in green, it goes up and down, and the range of movement is much more than on the bonds. And this is why people are scared off by stocks, because you will see bonds, it's obviously not as volatile. But if you just project this data and you map it over a 20-year timeline, it looks completely different. Then the volatility evens out over time. And you have a look where, this is a chart that I showed you earlier, where 10,000 invested in 2003, what that looks like in 2023. And also how, even though there is a 2008 crash where the stocks go, where the value of the stock investment goes below the value of the bond investment, it recovers in 3 years' time, and then it becomes significantly more valuable the longer the timeline goes on. Why I'm showing you this is, there's, understand that there is this volatility, but also remember and zoom out over the long term and what that looks like for potential growth. This chart is specifically interesting because of the 2008 crash, and it also it shows you why it is important to also have a portion of bonds in your portfolio in case there is a crash like this during your retirement years, or even close to your retirement years, when you're needing to withdraw from your investment portfolio. You want a portion that is not exposed to high risk or high volatile assets, just because you want to be able to withdraw from that. Because if you withdraw from your stock market investments during stock market crash, then you won't give it a chance to recover again. So savings accounts have a place. It's very important to have your emergency fund accessible in a savings account and not exposing that to volatile stock market investments, but also having short-term goals in savings accounts, where if you're saving towards a house deposit that is in the short term, or kids' education, or a wedding deposit, or whichever short-term goals you have, it's important to have that accessible and not invested in volatile investments. But for your long-term goals, you need growth, and you need your money to be invested in a smart way where it works for you. Because if all of your money is just in a savings account, that's really just telling the bank, here's my money, give me some interest, I'm happy with that. But they're just using your money to make more money for themselves. So you might as well get in on the profits too. Risk isn't scary when you understand it. So why do the ups and downs of the stock market look so scary? One thing I've come to realize with time is that the media will always love reporting on any negative stock market news. So if there is any negative movement, you will always hear about it. But positive stock market movements, which especially tends to happen slowly over time, they rarely report about. So unfortunately, it will always seem like there is some crash coming or the current crash is the end of the world because people love reading negative news. So that's why news outlets will continue publishing negative news. So if you're a stock market investor, the best thing that you can do is not to become too fazed by all of the negative stock market news. Take the stock market drop earlier this year when there was a lot of talk about Trump and tariffs. I'm sure you saw everywhere that the stock market is down, but barely a month later, the stock market recovered again. Did you read that anywhere in the news? I'm sure you didn't. The other reason stock market ups and downs look very scary is because you don't understand them. When you understand that volatility has always been a part of stock market investing and that it's an inherent trait that you need to deal with or learn to deal with, and also for taking this risk on the unknown volatility is also how you become rewarded as a stock market investor over time. Because look at this chart, which looks at all of the potential crashes and stock market drops since 1963. And you would notice there is a very clear trend over the long term is that the stock market recovers and that it continues to go up. So the question is not whether you should or should not invest. It's rather how are you investing and for how long. So something I have noticed is that the more educated investors become, the more risk they're willing to take. There is a clear correlation between education on stock markets and investing and risk you're willing to take. And with risk, I definitely don't mean buying crypto, meme coins, or stock picking. That's not the kind of risk I'm referring to. I'm purely referring to the amount of equity risk that you'll take in your portfolio. And no, this does not mean by the time that you're 50 or 60 or 70 years old and you're very educated that you're taking 100% risk in your portfolio, because you would always be rebalancing your portfolio as you age so that you don't expose your entire portfolio to equity when you're older. But this just really shows you that the smarter you are when it comes to the stock market, the more you understand it, the more comfortable you are with it, the more you will be willing to take equity risk in your investments, and you would not just stick to your safe savings account. And this is what I see with every single person that completes my course. The more knowledge they have, the more risk they're willing to take. And taking smart risk has never been easier because you can get diversified access to a global stock market ETF. So you can really expose your equity portion of your investment portfolio to the global stock market without having to pay high fees. It's very simple, one click to buy an ETF. And it's just so empowering to know that you can do this yourself as an investor and also gain confidence and understand and learn more over time. You don't have to have all of the knowledge or all of the education before you make your first move. If you're new here and you don't understand index ETFs that well yet, I've got a video here for you that will explain that better. Let's look at Charmaine, a university lecturer that took my investment course. She said that she was always very conservative with her money and that she saved a lot or kept it safe in a savings account and she liked earning good interest. She said that my financial decisions had been fear-based, but after doing the course and gaining more knowledge about investing, she felt empowered to take charge of her finances and expose more of her investment portfolio to equity or higher risk investments. Part of gaining the right knowledge is knowing how much you need to retire comfortably. So I've got a free financial freedom calculator that can help you determine exactly that. Follow the link in my description if you'd like to use it. So how much risk is enough? A rough rule of thumb calculation could be 110 minus your age, and that is how much you can expose to high risk or equity ETFs and the rest to lower risk or bond ETFs. So in my case, for example, let's say I'm 30 years old, which I'm not, 110 minus 30 would be 80, an 80-20 split. Some people would say 100 minus your age, but that would mean a 70-30 split. And I personally think at the age of 30 year old, But this is what where your risk appetite comes in. But at the age of 30 years old, a 70-30 split is potentially not optimal, especially if you've got other risk factors that mean that you could potentially have a higher risk appetite. But anyway, so let's stick to an 80-20 split. So 80% could be equity ETF, such an MSCI Global World ETF or S&P 500 ETF. And then the bonds would be the lower risk, more stable portion of your portfolio. But of course, this doesn't remain fixed because there are two moving parts. The first is the value of your equity or bond ETFs that will change over time. So that would mean that you would have to check in, let's say once a year, to look at your current split and how that has changed. For example, if the stock market increased in value, then your split could all of a sudden be 90-10. Or if the stock market lost a lot of value, your split could all of a sudden be 50-50. On the other side, as you age and you're nearing retirement and needing to withdraw from your capital, you would also need to factor that in and have to adjust your portfolio as you age. So I don't want to make it too complex right now. I just want you to think of those two things, because if you are a DIY investor, something that is important for you to take control of is rebalancing your portfolio as you age. Also, don't look at your investment portfolio in isolation. Consider all of the assets you have. For example, if you have got property investments, then I would personally add that to the low risk portion of my investments. So look at your total net worth. And then look at what your split between low risk and high risk investments is. The last thing I'll mention on that is if you've got your retirement assets planned out and you know how much you're going to need and how much you're, you know, planning to spend in retirement, then there is a portion of your assets that you're planning to have your kids inherit or that you're planning to pass over to the next generation, then I would separate those assets in terms of their risk splits. So for an asset that I'm planning to pass over onto my kids, that would have a different timeline because their timeline is potentially much longer than your timeline is. If you're very close to retirement, then your timeline is shorter. That would mean less risk in your portfolio. But for your kids, that if there are assets that you're planning to pass on, then the risk on that could be much higher potentially. So that's just something else that I would consider if you are nearing retirement. Here is a great chart that I love referring to because it shows us the range of returns that you would get depending on a portfolio split, a bond equity portfolio split. And this looks at returns of almost 100 years, of 98 years to be specific. So this is since 1926, the returns on a 100% bond portfolio on the one side and 100% stock portfolio on the other side. And it also shows you the range of the volatility. So how much it had gone up during the best year and how much it lost in value in the worst year. So if you look at, we're starting on the one side on the bond 100% bond portfolio. In the best year, the returns would have been 32%. And in the worst year, negative 13%. And then on the 100% stock portfolio, remember this is over 98 years of returns, 54% return was in the best year in that timeline and a negative 43% return in the worst year during that time. But what's very interesting is the average return over all of these years. And you'll notice it's 5% on a 100% stock portfolio, and then it gradually increases as the portfolio moves from 100% bonds to 100% stocks. It goes from 5% average annual return to 10.5% average annual return. And I think this image is really interesting because it basically shows you that the 100% bond portfolio limits your upside and downside and then gives you a 5% average annual return. On the other side, 100% stock portfolio has much more volatility because it had gone up more than 50% and lost more than 40%, but the average annual return had been 10.5%. And this is how I would think about the trade-off. So yes, there is, you're taking on more volatility, but there's also a higher average annual return. But of course, this does not mean going full on 100% in your portfolio, because if you are close to retirement, then losing more than 40% of value could be devastating and could actually cost you your retirement. This is why it's important to have a split and to adjust your portfolio towards bonds as you age. Let me know what you found interesting in this video and what you'd like to learn more of. See you next time.